The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
Good Tuesday. This is 91.3 KUAF, your home for NPR programming since 1985. And this is Ozarks at Large. For February 7th, 2017, I'm Kyle Kellums. Later today on Ozarks, we'll spend time at the Jones Center in Springdale for the Winter Special Olympic Games, and then climb to the roof of the almost-finished 8W Center in Bentonville to see where a different kind of fundraiser will take place for the Sunshine School. At least 18 people are trying to raise at least $1,000 each to go off the roof and rappel to the ground. And in about 12 minutes, John Brummett will talk to Roby Brock with our partner Talk Business and Politics about the week in politics and football. First, the cost of residential assisted living for elders can be expensive, depending on choice of accommodations. For low-income seniors, the Arkansas Department of Human Services can help foot the bill. But as Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports, certain financial requirements must be met, and enrollment is very limited.
Sarah Kane Bartlett is a clinical medical geriatric social worker who operates a private practice called Care Support Services. She assists elders no longer able or wanting to live at home to secure proper accommodations, skilled nursing centers for those who are frail, and assisted living for those who are seeking independence in a secure complex.
And I would certainly say 70 to 80% of people that are in assisted living are beginning to need some supervision.
Assisted living centers have evolved over recent years, with many now offering a continuum of care, level one for independent elders who require minimum monitoring, and level two for individuals requiring medical assistance.
There are many types of assisted living cultures in Northwest Arkansas, and that's what you have to know. We have one of the most lovely assisted livings in the area that was one of the very first. I think it was opened in 1997 or 98, and that's Brookstone.
Brookstone in North Fayetteville. Kitchen staff are busy preparing lunch this late morning, served restaurant style in the dining room. Murray Reagan banters with servers. He's executive director of Brookstone, which accommodates up to 73 residents in efficiency apartments. 2 one-bedroom suites.
It really is a community when you get to know all the residents and they watch after each other, and it actually becomes a family.
Now, Brookstone accommodates both independent seniors as well as elders with dementia disorders. And it's private pay only, with residents in many cases liquidating assets to move in. Murray Rager says Brookstone does not accept Medicaid, a federal entitlement to help offset assisted living costs for low-income elders.
I've been in this business now for over a decade, and I see the need to provide this option for everybody. Unfortunately, as the market developed, it became primarily a private pay service. I do see the options expanding, you know, for the Medicaid program, and I am all in for that, and I would like to see that expanded in the future, and I'm working hard for that.
Only a handful of assisted living facilities in Northwest Arkansas accept Medicaid, says geriatric care specialist Sarah Kane Bartlett.
I also take pro bono cases, and most of the cases I take pro bono actually could move into an assisted living, but they don't have the money to. Most of our assisted livings in Northwest Arkansas today run from $3,400 a month up to $6,000 a month. So unless you have reserves of that kind of money, you cannot afford private assisted living.
Bartlett says many Americans are under the illusion that Medicare, federal health insurance for those age 65 and older, will pay all assisted living costs.
Everybody says, oh, I've got Medicare. It'll pay for me. It won't.
But Medicaid is available to help impoverished elders or those who can prove they are low income.
So you can spend down to qualify for Medicaid. It's very complicated. You really have to work with someone that knows what they're doing to do that. But I've seen many people that have quite a number of assets actually spend down to where they qualify for Medicaid. It's very, very complicated. You really need to work with a person that specializes in that. As a social worker, I would never advise somebody on how to do that.
Medicaid can cover at-home skilled nursing care, institutional nursing care, and in very limited cases, as you will hear, assisted living. Elders must apply for Medicaid coverage to secure a special waiver for assisted living, but Ken Schrader, executive director of the Arkansas Residential Assisted Living Association, a trade group, says only 40% of assisted living facilities in Arkansas accept Medicaid waivers.
There's only like 1,200 slots available right now.
1,200 slots. What do you mean?
The program is capped, and so that's the upper limit of number of people that can be on the waiver in assisted living facilities. Even though there might be 3,000 beds available, there's only going to be 1,200 people in them.
So what happens to qualified elders who cannot obtain a Medicaid bed in assisted living? Geriatric care consultant Sarah Kane Bartlett says they end up in nursing homes.
You will find people walking the halls that actually don't need skilled care, but the state is paying for them to be there with Medicaid because they don't have the private funds to pay for assisted living and because they can't find an assisted living bed that will take them.
What policy wonks refer to as an entitlement disconnect. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
And we've provided a link to Sarah Kane Bartlett's geriatric care portal, as well as a link to the Arkansas Department of Human Services Medicaid funding portal. You can find those links at our website, ozarksatlarge.com. This is Ozarks at Large. Let me win, but if I cannot win, let me be brave in the attempt. These are the words of the Special Olympics Athlete Oath. They were written by Eunice Kennedy Shriver, who founded the organization in 1968. Today, there are 4.7 million athletes with intellectual disabilities involved in Special Olympics programs in 169 countries. Last week, Special Olympics Arkansas hosted its annual Winter Games at the Jones Center in Springdale. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda watched some of the competition, and she has this report.
Fans sitting on the sidelines of a basketball court cheer for athletes wearing helmets with masks as they run around the hardwood floor using poles to push a puck toward a small goal. Donna Kilmer, the Northwest Arkansas field representative for Special Olympics Arkansas, says this sport is called floor hockey.
A little different than the regular kind of floor. This is used as a stick, almost looks like a pool cue, and then a felt donut. And they move the donut around on the floor, goes into the goal, and it is really a fun competition, and they really get into it.
Kilmer's son is an athlete who got connected to Special Olympics through his school. At 25, Kilmer's son still participates in Special Olympics, which is for children and adults with intellectual disabilities.
Special Olympics, yes, is international. Special Olympics Arkansas has over 240 competitions all throughout the year throughout the state. And we offer over 20 different types of sports. So we are not just a one time a year. Our athletes also go to World Games. They go to USA Games. And just like the regular Olympics, it does change every 4 years. So we have Winter Games and then we have Summer Games and so on and so forth, just like the Olympics do.
Kilmer says oftentimes people with intellectual disabilities are overlooked and aren't given the opportunity to participate in sports.
They themselves don't even know they've got certain talents until we introduce them to these different sports. And they'll usually start off with bowling, and then we'll say, well, you've got a really good arm. Have you thought about softball? And so we're constantly trying to introduce them. In the process of doing that, that gives them confidence that before they didn't have. They didn't know they could do so many things. Their parents, their caregivers didn't know they could do so many things. Then that opens it up to the community, and the community starts seeing these people that are often hidden and go, wow, that they are really a good athlete. And our athletes are just that. They are athletes. They are trained, and they work hard just like professional athletes do.
Rewards for the athletes include high fives and encouragement to keep making goals in Special Olympics as well as within the community. Participants also receive tangible awards. During competition, athletes who placed first, second, or third win gold, silver, or bronze medals. All other competitors are given ribbons.
What's wonderful about Special Olympics and our athletes, that's not what's important to them. What's important to them is that they are playing alongside their peers and people that they know are like them and accept them, and that the people on the outside are cheering them on. It doesn't matter if they came in sixth or they got a gold medal. None of that matters.
At the state level, the Winter and Summer Games take place annually. Irvin Humphrey, Director of Sports, Training, and Competition for Special Olympics Arkansas, estimates there are about 350 athletes and Unified partners competing at this year's Winter Games. Unified sports include athletes with and without intellectual disabilities competing together.
Here in Arkansas, we have athletes from the ages of 2, which is our young and a half, at least 2 to 7 and a half. And I believe our oldest athlete at the moment is 68 years old. So with Special Olympics, it helps everyone become familiar with intellectual disabilities and pretty much be more accepting. And, you know, you can see our athletes out here playing hard just like everyone else. And it's just a great sight to see.
Humphrey has been a part of the nonprofit for about 2.5 years and says the athletes love competing.
They love being, of course, in the spotlight, and most of them are competitors. So it's like we're coming out here to win. You know, they understand the cause and what Special Olympics is, but they're competitors at heart.
One of those competitors is CJ Nash, who plays goalie for the Magnolia Magic's floor hockey team. He participates in several sports, including bocce and volleyball, but says floor hockey and basketball are his favorite because they involve a lot of running.
Growing up, I didn't get a chance to participate. I got to participate in basketball, but I didn't get a lot of playing time because I had a coach I didn't understand. But then it's heartfelt when you get teammates who are like you and they get to participate.
In addition to competing, Nash is an ambassador in the Athlete Leadership Program.
I write a speech and I get involved with the community, letting them know about Special Olympics and ask for donations and basically get the community involved with the Special Olympics and let them know, inform them that, hey, if you want to get involved, you know, just letting them know what Special Olympics is all about. If they ask me questions, I'll let them know.
Local residents can become involved this weekend by participating in the Polar Plunge at Beaver Lake. Registration begins at 10 Saturday morning. This annual fundraiser typically nets between $45,000 and $60,000 for the nonprofit. More information is available at SpecialOlympicsArkansas.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Ahead this hour, there is no shortage of art or artists in Northwest Arkansas. But something that can be in short supply is business and career advice for people wanting to make a living through art. An 8-week project facilitated through the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale can help.
So many artists, I feel this at least, this is the way it works for me, is you do 5 different things to be able to do your art. And that can be taxing, and sometimes the things that fall to the wayside are some of the professional polishing, whether it's a resume or grant application experience.
How artists are working together later on this edition of Ozarks at Large.
Your days are busy.
Work, school, errands, kids.
It never stops.
And the news never stops either.
You can keep up between Morning Edition and All Things Considered with Here and Now. Hi, it's Robin Young.
And Jeremy Hobson. Here and Now brings you breaking news, developing stories, the latest in the arts and innovation.
Asking tough questions, unpacking complex issues.
From across the country and around the world.
Join us.
Today from 1 to 3 on 91.3. This is Ozarks at Large. There was a football game Sunday, and Atlanta Falcon fans and New England Patriot haters aside, Super Bowl 51 is being lauded as one of the best football games ever. John Brummett, political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, watched the game, and in his regular weekly conversation with Roby Brock from our partner Talk Business and Politics, Brummett discusses football, politics, and political footballs. Brummett says he's using his Wednesday online column to talk about Lady Gaga's halftime performance and why he thinks it was more political in nature than other observers do.
Her show, which was, many people had wondered, what will she say politically and will there be a lot of falderal about it? As soon as she finished her spectacular show, where I thought she had plunged to her death there at the end, but apparently she's okay. But as soon as it ended, Fox News tweeted, "Nothing political, just sings the hits." Lady Gaga said, "I'm sorry, but they were wrong again." Fox News is often wrong, and they were on that. She opened it with snippets of two songs, one, God Bless America, and then This Land Is Your Land. This Land Is Your Land is a Woody Guthrie protest song that he wrote in protest of the positive images of God Bless America. Some people even consider it sort of a socialist, American socialist manifesto. If you read,
but a lot of people also like This Land Is Your Land.
It's
and
a wonderful
sing it as a
song. I'm telling you though that
sorts.
She. Here's what I'm getting at, Roland. She was expressing herself artistically. She was not going to take a moment and say something that would inflame everybody and ruin her show. She used her choice of music to make a subtle point politically and culturally, in my opinion. Further on, later in the show, her hit about I Was Born This Way is a complete, the song is, the whole point of the song is not just, it's a gay and lesbian anthem. It's also about what Anheuser-Busch had was about. And then she goes into the audience and she hugs someone in the audience. I think she sort of suckered the right wing. The right wing said, "What a great show. She just played the music," revealing that they're not very discerning in what they're seeing.
Well, but if you didn't see it, I mean, was a political statement made?
It was to me, and it will be relayed to my readers in Wednesday's column. And that's the thing about artistic expression, Roby, and you understand this. You're not trying to win an election. You're trying to make your point within the framework of what you do, of your art. And she did, and it's there for whoever wants to see it. And I saw it.
Let's turn our attention to state politics. Let's talk about tort reform. The Senate joint resolution was dropped late last week by Senator Missy Irvin, quite a few co-sponsors on there. When you look at the number of co-sponsors that are on there, I would say there's a high probability that it does get referred to voters, although there will be a huge effort to block that from happening. Is that when the battle takes place, or is there going to be enough of a battle put up to keep it from getting out of the legislature and being referred?
I'm not sure I follow. I mean, get the
as a referral as a constitutional amendment. Do you think that this thing with all the sponsors that are on there?
It's sponsored in the Senate. It's a Senate resolution sponsored by Missy Irvin, who has 15 co-sponsors. That's 16. She just needs two more to pass it. It has more than 50 in the House. I was talking to a senator who has a competing amendment, such as it is, who was telling me, "I'm just going through the motions. It's going to be tort reform. Everybody's decided preemptively that one of the two that will be referred will be tort reform." The business community, the medical community, the nursing home industry, they have tried this three or four times. They think they have waited long enough. It got thrown off the ballot, the nursing home proposal last year. Brian King voted against it, and they couldn't pass it in one committee. And then the Supreme Court threw it off because it was a statute that presumed to let the legislature set the rules for the court, and the Supreme Court threw it off. So what do they do this time? It's not just caps on human suffering, which is how I like to put it, punitive damages and non-economic damages, but there's a section that says, henceforth, the Supreme Court making rules for the court system of the state on the rules of evidence for criminal, civil, and appeal procedure, the Supreme Court, a supposedly once equal branch of government, has to run those over to the legislature, and by a three-fifths vote, the legislature can deny them and rewrite them and write its own rules. It puts the legislative branch in charge of the judicial branch. The reason being, if they're going to go to the trouble to pass an amendment to cap damages, they don't want rules of evidence that might undercut their advantage that they're getting themselves in the court. So they put this into the Constitution. Something can't be unconstitutional if it's in the Constitution. That's the most offensive part to me.
Won't that be, though, a pretty good argument to vote against it, though?
For me.
I'm just talking about it for those that are opposed to it, to the general public.
I believe this is going to get to the ballot, and I believe it's going to be an epic debate. And it is a debate. It's this business community saying we need a better business environment, and if we can't budget for our liability insurance or know what our liability is going to be, we can't create jobs. And then you've got the trial lawyers and other more progressive-minded people are saying you're putting a price tag on human suffering, mm-hmm. and you're saying a jury of one's peers must be limited in what it can say. I think it's going to be a heck of a debate. But that second part about the legislature taking over the Supreme Court's rulemaking, as I put it in the column tomorrow, this moves our lawsuits from a lawyer-judge relationship to a lobbyist-legislator relationship.
I think that's a message that we will see play out there in the public if it gets referred to the ballot.
I'm going to mention it every other day. As often as I say preposterous second place president.
John Brummett is a political writer for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, and his columns can also be found at arkansasonline.com. He talked with Roby Brock from our partner, Talk Business and Politics. And you can find a podcast devoted to Arkansas news every weekday evening at talkbusiness.net. This is Ozarks at Large. The city lake in Siloam Springs is surrounded by 165 acres of land. And since that land was acquired in 1944, there have not been many changes other than a pump house that was installed in 2009. Now, a major makeover is in the works, and the mountain biking community can't wait to dig in. Ozarks at Large's Zuzana Sitek has this report.
All right, everybody. Ready to start pedaling, start warming up?
On Saturday morning, as temperatures dipped into the 30s, more than 20 mountain bikers came out to the trailhead at Sager Creek near John Brown University.
All right, who's our locals here? All right, so feel free to anybody that wants to take lead as far as leading the faster group. I've ridden out here a few times on the north side. I've only seen the south side once. And so feel free to take the lead, show us the route, show us the trail for the ones of us that have never been out here.
Noel Howard with Ozark Off-Road Cyclists, also known as the OORC, organized the ride, but it's on David Van Sant's hometown trail. Van Sant is one of the locals who came to Saturday's ride to show the out-of-towners around the six-mile trail system built just last year.
For us to have went from no soft surface trails in Siloam and everybody loading their gear up and going to Fayetteville, Bentonville, Devil's Den, to ride, and now standing out here at this trailhead and seeing 20-ish people out here ready to ride on a trail that's less than 5 minutes from my house, it's absolutely amazing.
And Van Sant has a lot more to be excited about. On Monday, the city broke ground on a new project at the city lake. It includes more soft surface trails.
For us to have a trail going in at city lake is actually really, it's pretty near and dear to my heart.
Van Sant is the president of the Borderline Ozark Off-Road Cyclist Chapter. Borderline because of how close Siloam Springs is to Oklahoma.
And so once we had the JBU Trail funded and allotted for, that's when we started this chapter. We knew it was going to come, and we knew that it was pertinent to everything that was going on at City Lake.
The improvements at City Lake will be a collaboration between professional trail builders and volunteers with the OORC.
The OORC is the project manager of the City Lake project. Obviously, we have the city that we are accountable to. We have the funders who we're accountable to, and we're accountable to every citizen in town. And that's not taken lightly, but you can look at past projects the OORC has done, and you know that they have the tools and the ability to manage it fine.
Holland Hayden with the City of Siloam Springs says the local mountain biking community has been essential to getting the trail projects at JBU and City Lake off the ground.
It's so important to have a community be excited about something and be behind it and be a champion for a project, because they can either help you get going or they can stop you in your tracks.
Hayden says the project will be divided into two phases. Phase one will include 5 miles of soft surface trail, a parking lot, and a bridge over Flint Creek.
It might seem very simple, but that bridge is going to be a destination. It is going to be absolutely beautiful. It's going to be a place, I think, where people are going to take engagement photos and family photos. It's just going to be a beautiful, beautiful spot.
Phase two will consist of a bike park for all skill levels, a walking trail, disc golf course, fishing dock, and birder blind.
There really has been just a project begging to be done out here at City Lake. And we just haven't really gotten a great foothold and haven't been able to get it accomplished. So we're thrilled, obviously, to get this going.
And Van Sant says volunteers will be a crucial piece of the project, not only during construction, but also after the improvements are done.
Once you have volunteers that come out and they build the trail to begin with, there's a whole lot more buy-in and a whole lot more sense of ownership of that, sense of pride, and the work days come natural, all of the stuff that gets to put into that, and you have people who really know that trail system. And that's what we really need to maintain this thing long term, to let the donors step back and say, hey, you know, we've donated here, we'll donate to another project. We don't have to worry about this one because you guys are taking care of it.
Phase one of the improvements will be done by the end of this year, and phase two will be completed next year. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Susanna Sitek.
The entire project is expected to cost about $965,000. That money will come from the city, a grant from the Arkansas Highway and Transportation Department, and from private funding. And with that story, we welcome Susanna Sitek to our on-air staff. Also this week, she'll report on Seven Hills Homeless Shelter and challenges for that nonprofit. And just ahead, from one corner of Benton County to another, we'll find out why the Sunshine School is asking people to go over the edge of a 6-story building.
You are listening to your public radio station, which is powered by listener support. Hi, I'm Lee Wood, KUAF's membership director. Thousands of listeners to KUAF give annual or monthly gifts to help bring you the programming you listen to every day. You can support this radio station at any time online at supportkuaf.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. The terrain in Bentonville changes quickly. New buildings are going up all over the town. In the heart of Bentonville, the 6-story 8W Center is nearing completion. The parking garage is already working, and Ed Belto, with the developer Newmark Grubb Arkansas, says there's more to come.
60,000 square foot of office space. On the first floor, we're having a food court. Presently, we have Einstein Bagels, Jimmy John's Sub Sandwiches, and Tropical Smoothie Cafe. We hope to have a higher-end restaurant here on the corner of 8th and Walton, overlooking the intersection.
Last week, Ed met us on the top floor of the AW Center. Next month, there will be people on the roof, rappelling down the side of the building to raise money for the Sunshine School. The school, founded in 1958, is dedicated to providing resources for children, teens, and adults with disabilities, developmental and intellectual disabilities, as well as people from high-risk populations. Cindy Bilyeu, the CEO of Sunshine School, says the idea of getting people to raise at least $1,000 for the chance to drop 6 stories came to the school from the company Over the Edge. That company stages fundraising events in North America to help nonprofits raise money. Cindy Bilyeu says the concept resonated with her.
There's so many fundraisers and events in Northwest Arkansas. We were looking for something different and unique that might catch some attention, separate from kind of your traditional gala, golf, run type event.
But in order to rappel, there has to be a high spot above the ground willing to host such an event. Enter David Latanzio, the Jack Links Walmart National Sales Manager. The AW Center is owned by Jack Links, the makers of snacks like beef jerky, and the Link family. David says Jack Links has been a longtime supporter of the Sunshine School, and it sponsors the school's annual gala.
I learned while I was at the event that one of our merchants at Walmart was being auctioned off to rappel off a building, not any specific building. When I found out who it was, his name was Joe Grady, and we helped bid it up so we could raise $4,000 or $5,000 for the kids. And they were looking for a building, so I contacted Cindy and said, hey, I have a building.
And the Over the Edge event in Bentonville was a go. On Saturday, March 11th, people who have been able to raise at least $1,000 will have the chance to harness up, step onto the roof's ledge, and go over.
I have zero rappelling experience.
That's Amy Cook, one of the folks ready to raise money. She's pledged to raise $5,000, and according to her page at the fundraising website, she's terrified of heights, but she says she believes in the Sunshine School and Development Center's mission.
I have a lot of great supporters, and so if they're willing to donate and help me reach my goal, I'm willing to do something crazy.
Where are you at with your goals?
Right now, I'm just about 10% there.
Okay, put me down for 100, personally.
Got it.
Cindy Bilyeu says that sort of fundraising, David Latanzio quickly committing $100 to Amy's cause, is exactly why she loves the over-the-edge model.
So people have to reach out to their friends and families for support, and that gets our name out there to that many more people.
The school's goal is $125,000, and already 18 people have signed on to raise at least $1,000, including the event's honorary chair, Ed Romero, and the CEO of Jack Link's, Troy Link. Not included on the list, Ed Belto, the man who's overseeing the development of the building. He's been on the roof.
It's intimidating. I can promise you I'm not going over the roof, over the edge. But I think it's suitable for what we're trying to do. When David first came to me with Jack Link's and said, could we use the building to rappel off of, I didn't think initially that would probably be the best publicity for a brand new building. You know, why are you looking like you've got to get out of the building?
We ended our visit last week on that roof. And while six stories over downtown Bentonville isn't exactly the Empire State Building, it can be sweaty palm territory. There is a waist-high ledge that keeps anyone from falling over easily, but that just means participants will have to stand on that to begin their journey below. Remember Amy Cook, the woman terrified of heights, committed to raising $5,000? This was her first time on that roof.
What do you think now?
It's a long way down.
There is much more information at the school's website, nwasunshineschool.org, including individual fundraising pages for would-be rappelling folks and other ways to become involved. And if you've never seen a Sasquatch rappel down a six-story building, and you haven't, there is a rumor the Jack Link's mascot may go over the edge next month as well. The event is at the AW Center at 8th and Walton in Bentonville, Saturday, March 11th, from 9 a.m. until 5 p.m.
On the next Fresh Air, a look inside one of the biggest insider trading scandals in history. New Yorker staff writer Sheila Cole-Hatcar talks about the investigation into the hedge fund of billionaire trader Steve Cohen. Her new book, Black Edge, explores how Wall Street's elite accumulate wealth and the implications for the rest of us. Join us.
Fresh Air every weekday morning at 11 and again every weekday evening at 6 on 91.3 KUAF. Support for 91.3 comes from Archon Plus, providing digital and offset printing, graphic design, and promotional items, and a variety of business services for jobs of all sizes. Located just off College Avenue at 461 East Township in Fayetteville, Archon has been locally owned and operated for over 25 years. PrintingNWA.com or 444-7711 for more information. 91.3 FM is supported by Aurora Digital Signage, where images and videos can be instantly uploaded and displayed on multiple screens and at multiple locations, leading to improved communication in financial institutions, schools, and medical facilities, churches, and more. AuroraDigitalSignage.com for more information. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. The Arkansas Senate is giving approval to a bill that would require Amazon and other online retailers to collect state sales taxes. The bill's sponsor, Republican Senator Jake Files of Fort Smith, says this is not a new tax, but would put the state more in line with the rest of the country. He says Arkansas is one of only six states that does not collect taxes for online purchases.
In 2014, it was estimated on one study that Amazon sales alone would have brought $32 million into the state. And then I've heard anywhere up to $100 million, and that was for 2014, up to $100 million. So let's say it's somewhere in the middle. I'm getting a bill drafted right now that will charge the task force with determining how to use this money in future tax reform and for future tax cuts.
those additional tax cut proposals are to be considered by state lawmakers in 2 years. Sales taxes would be collected by out-of-state companies that sell more than $100,000 worth of products or make at least 200 separate sales transactions per year. The proposal now heads to a House committee. The University of Arkansas is reiterating measures need to be taken by the campus community to help quell the flu. Officials with the Pat Walker Health Center say they continue to see an increasing number of flu cases on campus. A list of suggestions from the health center encourages students, staff, and faculty to get flu shots, avoid sick people in large crowds, and to seek medical treatment if experiencing flu-like symptoms of fever, body aches, and coughs. And the university is being cited for work to make the campus more friendly to bicyclists. The League of American Bicyclists is designating the campus with a Silver Bicycle Friendly University Award for 2016. 2 years ago, the campus earned an honorable mention from the group. The upgrade comes from the U of A strengthening on-campus bicycle facilities, providing educational materials, launching an on-campus bike share program, and an increase in the number of people riding bikes to campus at least twice a week. Lawmakers in Arkansas House are voting to allow foreign governments to pay for legislators' travel expenses. In an 83-8 vote, the chamber advanced the measure to the Senate, which peels back a ban approved by voters in a 2014 constitutional amendment. State Representative Michelle Gray of Melbourne in North Arkansas says free travel for legislators will benefit the state.
Let's say they're a trip to Taiwan. If the foreign government, if Taiwan's government wanted to pay for a member, for the speaker, or a couple of members to go over there, that would be allowed in the official capacity as him as the speaker for the state of Arkansas.
Democrat Warwick Sabin of Little Rock helped write the 2014 voter-approved amendment that banned expenses-paid travel for lawmakers. Sabin says he wants to caution fellow House members not to break the faith with voters with what he calls a freight train-sized loophole.
It basically, you know, cracks the door wide open to a lot of travel that we said that we weren't going to allow lobbyists to pay for in exchange for, you know, all of the other things that were part of that compromise amendment.
The amendment also banned one-on-one wining and dining with lobbyists, in addition to raising legislative salaries. The bill redefines travel expenses, no longer calling it a gift to give free international travel. The bill will head to the Senate, where several changes are expected. The new year is starting with a robust building climate in the Arkansas River Valley. Talk Business and Politics reports the first month of 2017 had an 84% increase in building permits compared to the same time frame of 2016. The figure takes into account permits for Fort Smith, Van Buren, and Greenwood. For Fort Smith, about half of the $15 million in valuation of permits was related to commercial activity. Roof repairs from a strong hailstorm in April continue to factor into the report as well. Public school students from Paris and Fayetteville are being recognized as the state's top two youth volunteers by the Prudential Spirit of Community Awards organization. Emily Ritchie from Paris High School was named the high school honoree for establishing a nonprofit organization to create and distribute stuffed animals and dolls to give to dementia patients in 8 nursing homes. Gable Sloan, a sixth grader at McNair Middle School in Fayetteville, was honored as the middle-level state honoree for operating a nonprofit bakery and catering business that raised more than $4,000 for a variety of charities. Each will receive a $1,000 prize, an engraved medallion, and a trip to Washington, D.C. The awards have been presented for more than 20 years by Prudential Financial. The state of Arkansas may be officially recognizing more poets soon. The Arkansas House this week approved changes to the committee, which appoints the state poet laureate and shortened the term. Representative Carlton Wing of North Little Rock introduced his measure in style.
What this House bill does is help more folks take the post. No longer a lifetime appointment, it's now 4 years at the most. Now we get more participation, whether it's a him or a her, and much more celebration in iambic pentameter.
The first Arkansas Poet Laureate was announced in 1915. 5 have held the ceremonial honor since, though none of Arkansas's greats like Maya Angelou or Miller Williams have held the designation. The University of Arkansas women's track and field head coach Lance Harder will be included in the California Collegiate Athletic Association Hall of Fame as part of its 2017 class. Harder, now in his 27th year at Arkansas, earned 10 Division II Coach of the Year awards while coaching in California. The Arkansas Razorback men's basketball team will be in action tonight in Bud Walton Arena in Fayetteville. They host Vanderbilt, a team they've already defeated once this year. And the Walmart Amp is adding a pair of new shows to its 2017 schedule. It was announced yesterday Blink 182 will headline a show at the Rogers Venue on April 22nd, and Lady Antebellum will perform on August 5th. Tickets for both shows go on sale Friday in person at the Walton Arts Center box office at amptickets.com and by calling 443-5600.
KUAF is rebroadcasting in honor of Black History Month. Our award-winning two-part documentary, Arkansas Ozarks African Americans, Part 2, reveals how established Ozark Black districts dealt with Jim Crow.
Well, they give them 24 hours or they're going to burn them out. Now, I'll tell you what happened.
Part 2 of Arkansas Ozarks African Americans, Sunday at 3 p.m. on KUAF. To view a slideshow and learn more, visit the local tab on KUAF.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. Artist Inc. is a nationally recognized program designed to help artists learn more about business training. If painters, photographers, playwrights, and songwriters can understand things like marketing, pricing, and taxes just a bit better, they might be able to make their art their livelihood. The program places artists already advanced in their careers as mentors to emerging artists. This winter and spring, the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale is teaming up with the Mid-America Arts Alliance to bring Artists Inc. to Northwest Arkansas. Late last month, 22 artists were accepted into the project, and two of them, playwright Rachel Annette and photographer Marsha Lane Foster, recently came to our Furman Garner Performance Studio to talk to us. With them, one of the artist facilitators, songwriter and Fayetteville Roots Festival co-founder and co-organizer Brian Hembry. Brian says at the end of the 8 weeks, he thinks participating artists will have tools to help them streamline their lives.
So many artists, I feel this at least, this is the way it works for me, is you do five different things to be able to do your art. And that can be taxing. And sometimes the things that fall to the wayside are some of the, professional polishing, whether it's a resume or grant application experience, the things that you really need to take it to the next level, you're working those other endeavors or jobs to try to get to that moment. And so this is kind of meant to be a jump start and a boost to get, artists thinking about that. So as a facilitator, I feel like I'm participating as much as I am facilitating, because, in 3 days I learned so much, and I feel like over the 8 weeks I'm going to learn even so much more.
Well, and what's interesting about this is not designed to make artists better at their art. You have established artists. Marsha's had exhibits. There was the Hostage Project,
yes,
at ACO, MFA in writing, Rachel, and Killshot.
Mm-hmm.
What led you to apply to be part of this?
Well, me personally, having gotten to know Eve through the Hostage Project and
Eve Smith at ACO.
Eve Smith at ACO. And the Hostage Project being exhibited at the ACO, she mentioned it to me in the very early stages, probably about the time she talked to Brian about it. And I was hopeful at that time and excited, but then when it was happening, and I applied the very first day that the application was online, I was right on top of it and excited about it. So that's how I learned about it.
Rachel?
I think it's kind of the same process for me. Eve was kind of the greatest, I think one of the best advocators for the group, for Artist Inc., because I started working at ACO just doing some office work, and Eve would talk about Artist Inc. every day. And I'd be like, okay, I get it. And I honestly at first thought it was only for visual artists. I didn't see it being for theater artists. And then just sitting and talking to her and being able to ask and hearing her explain the program, I was like, oh my goodness, I totally need that. And so that kind of is what I did on the last day. That's a great contradiction. But it's really important to me, and it's something that I'm happy that it's for all artists and not just visual artists or not just musicians, that any of us can do it.
Is part of the goal here to allow talented people to perhaps get to the point where that's what they're doing for their livelihood full time?
Yeah, I think so. that's what most artists I know are working towards, but also what most artists I know don't have yet. It's that elusive carrot of sorts where it sustains itself. So I think that is the goal. But as I, you know, hear all the comments about why they applied, I think about this idea that I think there's another goal, and it's just this idea of collaboration. You know, as artists, we thrive through collaboration. But sometimes when you're in that mode where you haven't taken it to the next level, you haven't bought yourself enough time to do your art, you're on an island. And so you know collaboration is so important, but you don't have time to do that. And so to carve out three hours a week over 8 weeks to get together with other artists that are not just in your medium or in your circle, to me, that's huge. So I would suggest that that's a function of getting to that place where you can sustain yourself. But probably the most immediate function to me is the collaborative spirit of artisting.
Rachel, as a playwright, what can you get out of collaboration in a room that also includes singers, songwriters, visual artists, photographers?
Jeez. Well, I think for one, it's just nice to have a network. And this is kind of silly probably, but it's nice to have, like, when you're having a bad day or you got a rejection letter, to call somebody, even if they are a musician, just be like, this bad thing happened, and, like, let's go get for coffee, and to have, like, that community. And I feel like that's something that I've been missing since grad school, having a community of people. But then also, like, I've always wanted to write a musical. I would love to work with a musician and to, like, be able to meet the artists in my city and to know that my art form can expand is kind of what's amazing about this program, as well as that I could work with a musician and a visual artist could help me build a set for a specific play that I'm working on or a site-specific piece.
I love it. Let's just do it.
I've
been working on a musical idea concept for quite some time. So that I didn't know that. You know, I'm blown away. Like, this is the collaborative spirit right here. Awesome. I'm in.
Well, what will happen over these 8 weeks? I mean, you'll get together?
It's going to start out very broad, this idea of, like, what's your 5-3-1-year goal? You know, we start there. We also are going to be delivering these Pecha Kucha-like presentations. All of the facilitators will be doing that. And then by the end, all of the participants will have created a 15-slide Pecha Kucha-like presentation to present at the end. And so it's going to be a multitude of activities. And, you know, some of them, like goal setting, I was kind of skeptical. I got a lot from that. Pecha Kucha, I was really excited about and thought that would be the most interesting. I'm still working on mine because it's actually really a hard process.
Pecha Kucha? I'm sorry. I don't know what Pecha Kucha is.
These are Pecha Kucha-like presentations. It was invented by a Japanese architect. It's a 20-slide presentation where you get 20 seconds per slide to tell your story about your life or your art or your passions, or whatever it may be. And I first went to an actual Pecha Kucha here in Fayetteville, and it was just this kind of loose gathering. And it was like someone was talking about his love for equestrian arts, you know, and then there was a photographer. There was kind of like a free keg of beer over in the corner. It was people getting together in that collaborative spirit and sharing their vision for their art. So it's doing that in 4 or 5 minutes instead of doing that in some massive manifesto.
Rachel Marsha, have you thought about what you want by the end of May? Have you been able to think about it in concrete terms?
I think that what I'm looking forward to the most of getting out of the of Artist Inc. is learning that I've always had a hard time seeing myself as, like, that artist as a business, and learning, like, taxes and, like, which grants to apply for. Like, I've got the writing I've got down. I'm getting my plays produced across the country right now, but I don't have, like, oh, someone asked me for a contract. This is real. Someone asked me for a contract 2 months ago, and I was like, a what? Don't you just give that to me? I just sign it. What do you mean I have to write a contract? And so that part of it, I really am hoping that by May I can be like, here's my bomb contract. Here are my taxes. Here's what I absolutely, like, learning how to place a value on what I create is hard for me.
I already make a living with art in a sense because I have a studio. And so I have a portrait studio and that pays my bills. But with my fine art, which is how I differentiate it, you know, I don't have a client to please, so it helps me. I want to have the freedom to be able to create on my own terms, and if I can make my art profitable, then I have more freedom to create on my own terms. And I love my clients, and I love serving them, but I want to be able to take my fine art to the next level by having it not only pay for itself, but pay me.
Marshalline Foster and Rachel Annette are two of the 22 artists from a variety of disciplines participating in the Artist Inc. program through the Art Center of the Ozarks in Springdale and the Mid-America Arts Alliance. We also heard from one of the artist facilitators, Brian Hembry. There is a list of all the artists and more information about the program at the Art Center of the Ozarks website. That's acozarks.org.
Ellen Bethay's husband, Archie, died of liver disease last year. Planning his funeral was emotionally and financially draining.
Archie didn't have very much life insurance, maybe $5,000, and I had a little bit of money in the bank, and it took everything.
I'm Robert Siegel. What's behind the high costs of funeral services? This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 3 to 6 on 91.3. 91.3 is supported by Highlands Oncology Group, helping patients fight the battle every day with a team of cancer specialists in both Benton and Washington counties. Services include American College of Radiology certified imaging departments, infusion centers, pharmacy, clinical trials, and more. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. And Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families celebrate their 16th annual Soup Sunday, February 19th from 4 to 7 p.m. at the John Q. Hammonds Convention Center in Rogers. Guests sample soups, breads, and desserts donated by local restaurants and vendors. Children's games, live music, auction items, and more will be available. 927-9800 or aradvocates.org for tickets and information. A service of the Walter J. Lemke Department of Journalism and the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 FM, KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, and Sonora. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kelms. Another brand new show tomorrow at noon and 7. We'll end today with music from the duo Goose. They're going to be at George's Majestic Lounge Saturday night. Doors open at 7. Music starts at 9. It's an 18 and up show. This is their song, What Am I Running From? Thanks so much for listening. Have a great rest of your Tuesday.
What am I running from? What am I running from? Thought I'd like it being on my own. Look around, nothing's familiar. Got your letters. Don't know why I haven't picked up the phone. Afraid to think that I failed ya. And I say, oh no, what did I do? I left everything I ever loved behind. And that means you and I say, oh no, what have I done? Now that I'm finally standing still, I'm asking, what am I running from? What am I running from? What am I running from? Nothing is chasing me. I just keep going in circles, trying to avoid who I've become. This isn't who I want to be or who I wanted you to see. And I say, oh no, what did I do? I left everything I ever loved behind, and that means you, I say, what have I done? Now that I'm finally standing still, I'm asking, oh no, what did I do? I left everything I ever loved behind, and that means you, I say, oh no, what have I done? Now that I'm finally standing still, I'm asking, what am I running from? What am I running from?
running.